For Project Spurs, I'm Paul Garcia, and this is the Spurscast. In today's episode, I'll be speaking with Project Spurs writer Colin Reed, where we'll discuss the Spurs' first preseason game, lineup notes, and team roster moves. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Colin. Colin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Exciting preseason basketball is upon us. I, for one, was very excited to see Derek White break out the new bald look when he played with the Boston Celtics on Sunday. That was quite the sight to behold. So and I think there was a couple other exciting preseason things that happened over the past couple of days as well.
Yeah, just like you, I've caught myself watching a few other teams. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about the Spurs here in a bit here, but I've actually found myself too, like scheduling games to watch, like just at least the first opening quarter. Like, I really wanted to watch the Suns to see what they look like with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. And then also, I caught a bit of the Celtics game the other day. So, but you know, if you're tuning into the Spurscast, you're here to listen about the Spurs. And so, Colin, that was a really fun preseason game on Monday night in Oklahoma City. Not only did the Spurs fans get to see Victor Wembanyama in the NBA community, but also, we got to see Chet Holmgren make his debut as well, and the Oklahoma City Thunder fans should be thrilled as well, because both players just really stood out in this game, put on very impressive showings in both in their first games to get against each other, where it almost looked like kind of effortless for these two young players. Like, just the fact that they put up 20 each, like 20 plus, it was just really, really a really fun game. But of course, we're here to talk about the Spurs, so let's talk about Wemby more particular. In his first game. So the Spurs did play on Monday in Oklahoma City. They lost by 1 point in this preseason game. And again, it's a preseason game, so you don't want to put too much stock into wins and losses with preseason. Wemby did play in three quarters, where he played about 6.5 minutes the first quarter, 7 minutes the second quarter, and then I think about 6 minutes in that final quarter. He scores 20 points, most of those in the first half, 18 points in the first half, on 8 of 13 shooting, 2 of 5 from 3, 2 of 3 from the free throw line. He grabs 5 rebounds. He did have 2 fouls. Has 2 steals and 4 deflections, a team high, 1 block and 4 turnovers. And then just looking at his points breakdown with how he scored his points, he had 10 points in that layup dunk range. He had 2 points from the free throw line and then 6 points from those above the arc three. So let's focus, Colin, on tell me your impressions of Wemby on offense. What did you think of him on offense? And then we'll talk about defense in the second part.
Yes. So I thought the shooting tonight, both from kind of near the rim and from three, I think that was kind of throughout the season, that's kind of like the high end of what you're going to see, where things are going in. I mean, that's 40% from three. That nifty spin move up and under that he had on Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, yes. Like, that was very nice. It'll be interesting. Like, I don't know if that's a shot you make 10 times out of 10 if you shot that 10 times. So I thought, you know, that's what it looks like, because we've seen it at Summer League where it's like, okay, we see all the good things he does on the court. What does it look like when he has an off shooting night? And then we see it here where it's like, well, this is what it looks like when his shots are falling. And I think throughout the season of his first year, the shooting itself is going to like fall in that range. But I still think that a whole lot of his value is going to come from other places. And specifically on offense, one thing that I saw that was really impressive, and we saw it at Summer League too, but it was impressive to see with real NBA rotations, is that passing, where he is seeing angles that are difficult for other people to see, because he's not looking at from my chest to Zach Collins' hands or chest. He's saying, well, my arms are 3.5 feet long. If I stretch out my hand and like flip pass to him, the starting point of the pass is actually over here, and that changes the angle. He's seeing that in his head. He's doing things like a 4-5 pick and roll where he's the ball handler and Zach Collins is the screener.
Yes.
And you know how you said it was effortless. I agree. But at the same time, one of the things that I think makes him such a scary player is I think one of the things that he can improve on that will come in time is the execution. Like, once he gets the NBA speed down, because some of those passes he had, maybe they were a little late, maybe they were just a little bit off target. And as soon as he gets the handle a little bit tighter and the execution and timing a little bit quicker, like, I don't know, even when he's having an off shooting night with the playmaking that he has, you know, that play where he stole the ball behind the back dribble after he gathered it, threw it to Blake Wesley. It ended up being a miss, but it was a crazy like sequence of events there. And I think that he is not quite at NBA speed yet. I think I saw, Express News writer Jeff McDonald say something like, he really doesn't know what he's doing on an NBA court yet, and still he looks like this.
Yes.
And so it's just crazy, because when you watch him, you do see things that he can improve on, but they're they're all things that I think every rookie comes in and improves on naturally. Like as he gets used to the speed of the game, those passes are going to get even better. And just the fact that he's seeing it is what's exciting. Once the execution comes, it's going to be just incredible to watch.
Yeah, and so like going back to one of the possessions, how you said his vision, that's one of the things that really stands out to you, is there was a possession in the first half where the Spurs throw him the ball in the post, and he has Jalen Williams guarding him, the forward, and so he has that height advantage, that mismatch, and so then the Thunder sent a second defender at him, and I thought, oh, okay, here's a moment where he might turn it over, what's going to happen here, and no, he patiently waits till that guy gets even closer and kind of crowds his space a little bit, and he's still kind of just observing over his shoulder, and he sees Charles Bassey right under the basket, he throws in the pass like wide open. But and then Bassey ended up missing the layup. But it's just like you said, he doesn't get frustrated when that happens, when people are sending double teams at him. And then post game, I listened to his audio and watched the video, and man, he had a very thoughtful answer that I really haven't heard a lot of players say. So he said this. He says basically he's learned that anytime he puts that ball on the floor and he's gonna start driving in, he's gonna see multiple defenders start coming at him. He's already used to that. He just knows the kind of attention he draws. He talked about there was a really good answer where he says, when he takes that first dribble inside, when he's gonna drive, he sees 2 to 3 eyeballs on him from the other team, which means that they're not watching his teammates. And that was actually on that play where he had to kind of like you said, he went with the spin and then he had to go back and go left up and under to make it. That's how he has to be creative. He just kind of thinks of those things on the fly. He's not really saying, oh, this is what I'm gonna do ahead of time. It's more so how he's kind of just thinking and processing the game. But like you said, I mean, just the fact that he has that vision ready, like he's already seeing it just as a young player, that he's already he can draw this much attention and he knows what to do whenever that's happening. So yeah, man, I was just really impressed offensively. And this didn't happen in the game, but there was a set from their scrimmage on Saturday night where they actually ran a double drag screen for him. So like you said, 4 or 5 pick and rolls with Zach Collins, and then the Spurs have him running, being a ball handler like a guard would. And that was what was really interesting, was that all week we heard about players talking about how he doesn't really have a position. He can play point guard for a bit. He can play small forward. He can play the center spot. And so that was very interesting to see that he's very comfortable handling, whether it's out on the wing, whether it's inside on the post. He has just so much talent there and just so much ability. And that's what's going to be interesting to see, is how do the Spurs maximize that talent from him. And that was something that Coach Pop talked about even after the game, that they don't quite know where they're going to keep him out on the floor. Is he going to play inside? Is he going to play outside? It's just going to kind of be some places they're going to have to kind of get a feel for where he plays best at different times in the games and at different sequences. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, him and Chet, man, they had really good games offensively, especially in that first half for both players. And then he did have some putbacks and things like that to get his points as well. There was some sequences like that. And then one of the ways he got points on offense was by playing defense, by sticking his hands in on the ball handlers, by creating havoc on those driving lanes for other players. Then he would get out and leak out for quick outlet passes. He had four fast break points yesterday. So talk about what were some of his impressions on the defensive end, one where the Spurs had in place, because this is something I think you had mentioned earlier in the summer. You found interesting that they weren't going to have him so close to the basket most of the game. And then two, his matchups, that he didn't just guard that traditional big man like Chet Holmgren in this one. He mainly matched up with either Lou Dort or Williams. What were your thoughts there on defense?
Yeah, so I think the thing that immediately stuck out to all of us, and Bruno passed us a pounding the rock word about it, was the leaking out, because that was just, that was happening immediately. The ball would go up in the air and he would just be immediately running down the court. And it was happening with such a frequency and something that I hadn't seen from him when we watched Mets 92, that it didn't seem like he was just like, oh, I'm going to go get mine. I'm going to try to go get easy points. It seemed like that was something that they were like, hey, it's a preseason game. It's your first time out on the court. Let's just see how this works. And so it was interesting because he wasn't crashing the defensive glass very hard in the first quarter and the second quarter a little bit. And then, like you said, in the third quarter, he starts kind of staying around the rim a little bit more on both the offensive glass and the defensive glass. He only had the one block. It was a very impressive block, the distance that he made up in a little bit of time. I think what was crazy was kind of like what you're saying, is just with his length, his ability to disrupt drives, where I think, a big part of skill is you do something so many times that you can generalize it and you don't really have to think about it, because the NBA is going so fast that if you think about, okay, well, I need to dribble this way and bounce it a couple times with my left hand and then switch it over. If you're thinking that hard, you're going too slow. But these players have never played with someone who, like I said, they have 3.5 feet long arms, who's just going to like reach over from 2 feet away and give it a little tap. It's just, there's not, that's not something that they're used to. And so they're just driving like they normally would. And all of a sudden, a contest, a tap from a weird location comes. And I think when it works, it looks really cool. I am concerned about the hands in the cookie jar type thing, where maybe he's putting himself out of position or he gets like cheap ticky-tack fouls. But I think, you know, the fact is, a lot of this stuff is muscle memory and it's instinct. And when you have someone who's out there that people have literally never experienced before, that it you can't rely on that anymore, because now that this guy is going to come in and start contesting you and messing with you in ways that you don't get to play against, except, you know, two or four nights a year. So it's, I thought that was really cool. I thought, you know, it is interesting because I do think he provides a good deal of rim protection if they want him there, even the kind of rotational rim protection where he can be out on a wing and then rotate over. And that wasn't, we didn't quite see that last night. Last night, they were fully committed to wing Wimby. But it is really interesting just to see some of the things that he can do, even because that's the first thing you think of is rim protection. And he's like, well, no, I can get up into perimeter players too. And mess with their handles a little bit. And kind of going to wing Wimby, just real quick, this isn't specifically defense, but one of the things that really, I mean, we talked about, we've already talked about it a bit. I talked about it on Twitter yesterday. We've talked about it all summer long, this whole wing Wimby thing. Last night, the player that was checking in and out for him throughout the night was Jetty Osman. Like that, it's just, Jetty Osman was like the player that would come in when Wimby would come off the floor, and then Wimby would come in for Jetty. And it's just like, that is crazy. I don't know Jetty's height off the top of my head, but like when you're bringing him into the game, you're replacing a wing-sized guy with a 7'3" guy, and that's the only change they made to the lineup a couple of times. And it's just like, what is happening? I mean, it's cool to watch. It's just, it's so mind-blowing. Like, you and I have spent so long analyzing this game, and with Wimby, there's some of the things where we kind of have to take a couple steps back because it's just like, okay, this breaks all the rules of what we've seen, and it's working. But yeah, on defense, I am excited to see his rim protection skills a little bit, and we didn't see that, but I really liked the ball pressure that he provided.
For sure. And just, it kind of surprised me the fact that they were letting him leak out, like you said, you know, on defense, because that's actually, that breaks one of their defensive principles. One of their, I don't know if they still do this. They used to follow that Krebs cycle that they were known for, where it basically means like, you don't start your next possession of offense until you secure that defensive board. And so that's interesting that the fact that he's placed out there on the wing on some of those possessions that they're saying, you know, you try to make that steal, and if you can get it or disrupt something, you start taking off. And so that's why because there was a few possessions where like the camera would zoom back to the offense when they dispersed, didn't get the ball, and it was like 4-on-5. And so I was like, wow, like they're actually just like, you know, they're telling him to do that, which maybe again, that's taking advantage of his size, his athleticism, his length. And then of course, if he gets that kind of outlet, then no one's going to stop him 1-on-1. I mean, we saw in a possession where he just pump faked and then he just dunks it right away on a guy. So, we'll see how much of that follows through. I also found Pop's comments interesting also, because he mentioned some different things here where he said basically kind of what I said earlier about offense, whereas they don't know exactly where they want him to play either on defense. You know, Pop says, you know, they want to get some more data. They want to look at some percentages of how, you know, players are shooting against him, maybe out on the wing versus out inside. They also want to look at matchup specifically. Like if there's a big, you know, burly center who's very physical, they don't want Wimby in there down near the paint. But if it's like a player who Wimby would more so have the advantage of physically, or with his length and stuff, then they probably would want him in the paint. So that was interesting to hear that Pop doesn't even know quite, you know, where. I think we might see games where he's playing more so in the paint, maybe other games like where you said he's like a wing Wimby, where he's playing out there on the wing to disrupt things for the team. So I just found it very interesting. And like you said, that Jalen Williams play where Williams, it looked like he crossed him up and got, was going about to get to the rim, and then nope, Wimby just boom, he just throws that shot. Like you said, in the second half, we saw him more so near the paint, and there was a play where Josh Giddey tried to drive on him, and he even though he didn't block the shot, Giddey had to put up a very tough contested shot against him. And so we're going to get to see the variety that he brings in this team. And so and like something you mentioned was, you know, he was asked after the game, you know, what did Pop tell you, you know, on defense coaching wise, you know, what did you need to improve on? He did say that there was a possession on defense where he kind of stuck his hand at the wrong spot and he wasn't supposed to do that. He kind of, and Pop's going to correct him on those kind of things. And so that's just like what you said, maybe, you know, he's got to watch out to make sure he's not getting any kind of foul trouble or anything like that. So yeah, man, like I said, it was just really, really fun to watch that game. You know, for Spurs fans, it was fun because obviously Wimby, seeing what kind of dynamics he's going to bring to the game, but then also for Thunder fans, Chet Holmgren on the other side had a really good game for Oklahoma City. Yeah. And their future is bright as well.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And so now, Colin, let's go ahead and talk about just some lineup notes, something that you mentioned here. Like you talked about how I didn't even notice that I knew Jetty was the backup wing off the bench, but I didn't know he was actually specifically coming in for Wemby. That was very interesting. So let's talk about the lineups that the Spurs have, because they might have given us a little bit of a hint for what they're going to use in the regular season. So first, a note of who was not available. Keldon Johnson and Jeremy Sochan did not play in this game, just to what Jeff McDonald reported as general soreness. So nothing too concerning. Maybe they'll play in the next game on Friday. So the starters the Spurs rolled out were Trey Jones at the point. You had Devin Vassell at the wing, Julian Champagne at the wing, Wemby at the four, and then Zach Collins at the five. This is on offense. And so we would assume that one of Keldon or Sochan's going to end up starting there on the wing. What are your thoughts about once the whole team's healthy, about who do you think it's Champagne who goes to the bench? And do you think it's Keldon that ends up in the starting unit? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's tough. I do think that Jones starting, to me, is a signal that he is going to be the starting point guard. Mm-hmm. I know that there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, can they kind of do play creation by committee and bring Jones off the bench and then just have their five guys. Mm-hmm. In it. But to me, I know a lot of the times you and I have watched long enough to know that if Pop is missing someone from a unit, he, instead of putting in someone from the unit right below it. So like I was rewatching 2014 game since against OKC. Mm-hmm. And Tony Parker was out of the second half because he had an ankle injury. Well, instead of starting Patty at the second half, they started Corey Joseph because Pop likes to keep his units intact. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think if he wants to bring Trey Jones off the bench, he would have even done it in this game because he would want him to get that experience of running with the bench. So the fact that he started, to me, is a tell that he's probably going to start, even though two of the other guys competing for that starting spot were out. I think, to me, that was a sign. I think, to me personally, I don't know what they're going to do, but I have fallen more in liking of starting Sochan, because I think his switchability next to Wemby and his ability to create next to Wemby is super good. I know that people talk about Keldon's three-point shooting, but if you kind of look at it year over year, it's actually a pretty streaky number. He had one really good year a couple seasons ago. And then outside of that, it's not necessarily this level where you're considering him a super high-level shooter. You know, when you look at both volume and percentage, I think sometimes we look at just a percentage and we don't factor in the fact that, like, okay, well, you're shooting 40% on how many attempts. So to me, I think it's going to be Sochan, just because I think that defensive versatility, I think that playmaking next to Wemby, I do like that a little bit more. And then I like, obviously, completely different player, completely different play style, but Keldon in the Manu role, where he comes in as like energy guy, you know, as things are starting to lull from the start of the game, this guy's going to come in and be a wrecking ball. I just think that is actually going to be a better role for him too. I think he's going to be able to attack in those moments even more. And I think he can be a focal point of a bench unit. So I think that, to me, I like the Sochan start. I have no idea what they're going to go with because they've been really tight-lipped on it, but I like the Sochan starting lineup with Trey Jones a little bit more, with Keldon Johnson being the Manu six man type.
Okay. So I have two comments there. First on Jones. I think that, like you said, I think that he's going to end up being the starting point guard just for a few reasons. One, I think it was one of his comments in training camp where he basically talked about being almost like an extension of the coach on the floor, where, you know, Pop kind of wants to have that organization out on the floor. And that's kind of his job, is more so to do that first before, you know, going out and being a scoring guard. And then two is also something that Wemby said yesterday after the game, where he talked about how Pop, and one of the ways he shows his coaching is he called them like the creators on the team. So I would assume that's like Trey Jones, the point guards. He kind of Pop gives those those players first, like the message, and then those players go out and kind of like give the overall tone to the team of you know, what we're going to do here in these next few sets. And so again, that's why I think that Pop would more so want to have a general point guard out there who's going to kind of just get the players in their sets. And you saw even by a stat line last night, like 12 points, 6 assists, those kind of things kind of show you that he's just that point guard that you want on the team. Now, regarding the start, who's going to end up starting at that spot, at the wing spot, I would say I'm going to flip it on you, where I think that they're going to give Keldon the opportunity. But I think just after like 10 or 20 regular season games, if they see that he's kind of struggling with the shot again, then I think they will experiment again and put Sohan in that starting unit. So I'm kind of like you, where I think it's going to be Keldon first. And then if it doesn't work, then they give it to Sohan. But I think one of those two players will end up being the starting that last fifth starter. So now let's talk about the second unit that the Spurs had in this first preseason game. They had Blake Wesley as the backup point guard. They had Malachi Branham as the wing, Jetty Osman replacing Wemby there, also as another wing, Doug McDermott, and then Charles Bassey. So they kind of stuck to a similar format of like one big and then four wings or guards out there alongside Bassey. Now, again, once Keldon and Sohan get healthy, then Champagne might join that second unit, or even Keldon or Sohan, one of those players ends up going to the second unit. So that means two of these players that we saw in the second unit last night might end up being not being part of the rotation as much early on. So what are your thoughts on that? The fact that they're about to, even though it looked like they had a pretty good bench unit there, it could change once they get more players available.
Yeah, that's one thing I was thinking was through the first 3.5 quarters, or I guess the first 2.5 quarters, through the middle of the third quarter, they had a 10-man rotation, but two of their best players were out. Yep. And there is no NBA team that plays a 12-man rotation. Mm-hmm. That's kind of madness, to go that deep on a nightly basis. So like you said, there's some level of, wait a minute, what's going to happen here? And this is one of the reasons why I actually think Sohan off the bench could work, or at least maybe Sohan starts, comes off early, and then goes back in with the bench. Because looking at this second unit, part of me does wonder if Wesley is going to get some more G League time, if he is going to be kind of like that guy who's on the fringe of the rotation, but they're going to give him a lot of run in Austin. And then Sohan can be the point guard of the second unit. Yeah. And I think that doing that unorthodox thing with him makes more sense against another bench lineup than it does against a starting lineup. So I think what was really interesting to me was the fact that Wesley was in this 10-man rotation over
Graham.
Devontae Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Devontae Graham. Yeah. That was really interesting to me, because Graham was a part of the regular rotation in the regular season last year. And when every person who analyzes the Spurs were putting out their depth charts with the free agency stuff, I don't know if a single person was putting Wesley above Graham. And I think Wesley did look better last night than he looked in summer league. There was one play that stuck out to me where he kind of snaked into the middle of the court, was very patient, kind of waited, got the defender on his back, waited for the contact to see if he could draw the foul, and then shot that little floater shot. And just looked more patient and was being more deliberate. So that was really good to see from a development standpoint. And it looked like, maybe he deserved to be in that rotation. I just think coming into the game, you were kind of penciling Graham in as a rotation player. And the fact that he wasn't with that group, to me, was interesting.
Okay. Also, something that leads to what you were saying about maybe Sohan running more so the being the ball handler, lead ball handler in that second unit, is there was a few minutes that would go by where Pop didn't have a traditional any point guard, and where he had Malachi Branham or Devin Vassell bringing the ball up. So again, even though he ended up bringing Blake Wesley in at some point, he also kind of he let the team run some possessions without a traditional point guard out there. So I'm interested to see as well. I mean, like, man, like, if you have to, if Champagne ends up getting some of those second unit minutes, I mean, I just, because like a lot of those players played really well off the bench there. Like you said, Wesley had a good night. And again, it's just one game. Branham looked really good. Again, he just continued to make leaps and bounds. Jetty looked good in the minutes that he was getting. Doug McDermott was on fire, 12 points immediately off the bench. And that's kind of what you expect from him. And even Charles Bassey was really good, 12 rebounds, just a force there. So yeah, man, I just don't know who's coming off that bench. Two players are probably going to have to, sit most nights, because like we said, they're going to add Keldon and Sohan, and then maybe even Champagne, who we know is a lights out shooter who they would want out on the floor. So that's gonna be interesting to watch. And so just looking at the players that aren't in the rotation just based off one preseason game, that would be Graham, like you mentioned, Devontae Graham, Sandru Mamukelashvili, Cedi Sissoko, who Pop told, according to Jeff McDonald, he said that that Sissoko is expected to get a lot of minutes in Austin this year. So that's, you know, that's pretty that's pretty understanding. Serge Ibaka Rice also wasn't in the rotation. He played late in the games. Dominic Barlow and then Charles Bediako, who's on a training camp contract. And then one player who I think is still going to end up getting waived most likely is going to be Kent Burch, because he still hasn't played. He got a DNP last night in that game, and we still haven't seen him even like in the scrimmage. He didn't play either in that Spurs scrimmage. So again, I don't know what's going to end up happening with Burch here. Were there any other players you want to discuss from that opening preseason game?
Yeah, so just a couple of quick other notes was that I think just kind of like how I went to how Pop, when there's a starter out, he likes to promote someone from the third unit so that second bench unit can remain intact. I do wonder if that's what's happening with Champagne as well, where he is going to be kind of that fringe rotation guy. He comes in on certain nights depending on what's needed, but they didn't want to break up the Branham, Jetty, Doug core.
Okay.
Another thing that was interesting to me is, you know, you and I have spent a ton of time on this podcast this summer talking about who are they going to waive? Who are they going to keep? They acquired a bunch of players. You know, is it going to be Block? Is it going to be, who is it? And, you know, it was kind of hard because, well, first of all, we couldn't talk to them. It was the middle of the summer. But it was just really like, what is their intention with some of these players they're acquiring, because they're getting assets in return? Are they even looking at the players they're getting back? And to me, last night was a signal that, especially at least to start the year, but I don't think he's going to do anything to lose that spot. Jetty Osman is like a firm part of this rotation right now.
Okay.
He is like part of, you know, I don't know how deep the rotation goes, 9, 10, whatever. But like Jetty Osman is a part of it. And just based on how he played last night, I don't foresee him losing that spot. So I think that I would say that part of the Cleveland trade was them targeting him. And I know that you and I talked a lot about kind of players that would be good for them in free agency. And I think, you know, in retrospect, their free agent signing was Jetty. They just traded for him instead. And he matched a lot of the things that I think the team needed anyway. So to me, I think he is firmly part of the rotation, which is good to have some closure. Because like I said, you and I have been talking about that a bunch when it came to some of the players they acquired, where it's like, okay, who's going to be here? Are they going to waive anyone? If they don't waive them, are they even going to be in the rotation? So it's really nice to get some answers to some of these questions.
Yeah, and I think I'd have to do my research, but I think he's a player who they've been linked to in the past, like, you know, wanting to trade for, wanting to sign in previous, you know, summers and things like that. So, yeah, and we saw it both, like you said, he's part of the rotation based on what we saw last night, what we saw in that Saturday scrimmage. He was one of the first players out there. Also, even like in the practice footage that they've sent out to the media, he's been one of the players that you kind of see it a lot in a lot of the clips and things like that. And so, so it looks like Jetty definitely is probably a part of this team for the future, for at least this season. All right, so Colin, our last topic here is they just made some minor roster moves today on Tuesday that you and I are recording this. The Spurs signed Eric Stevenson and Paul Watson to training camp contracts. So that brings them a full roster. And so Stevenson, he was actually part of the Spurs' summer league team. He's mainly a shooter from 6'4 guard out of undrafted out of West Virginia. So again, if you watch the summer league Spurs, you saw him a lot in those lineups. I think he started a few games for them. Paul Watson is a 6'6 guard forward who's 28. He was undrafted in the 2017 NBA draft, and he has 3 years of experience in the NBA with the Raptors, Hawks, and Thunder. As of the time that you and I are recording this, I saw a video clip of Stevenson in the gym shooting today at a practice of the Spurs. I didn't see Watson there, but I wasn't there in person. And so, you know, I'm just thinking they might just sign these players and then waive them so that they can end up on the Austin Spurs roster, or maybe they want to start sitting some players out in these next few preseason games. So they want to just have some additional depth. So some players available. So that's why they want to keep the roster full until they need to make those cuts. Right after the preseason ends. Or option three is maybe Watson, Stevenson, and Charles Bediako, who we saw play last night, maybe one of those three players is trying to earn that final two-way roster spot, because they do have one open roster spot available. Did you have any comments about either of those three players?
I guess my only question is, how many years of service does, I know that Watson came in 2017, but how many years of service does he have? Because if he has too many, he can't be a two-way.
I want to say he has three. From what I saw on the NBA roster, yeah, he has 3 years of experience.
Okay. If this is going to be his fourth year, I don't know.
He's done one two-way also with the OKC before.
Okay. I do wonder if he might be out of eligibility for being a two-way then at that point. I think that the years of eligibility that you have for a two-way might have changed in the most recent CBA. But I think for these players that they just recently signed, Stevenson and Watson. I think it's one of those things where if you sign this, well, it used to be an Exhibit 10 in the old CBA. It's like an Exhibit 11 now. That's like a contract, but it's just a summer training camp contract. And if you make it through all of it, you get an additional like bonus for like having signed with the team and being a part of it. And then that kind of gets these players into their pipeline, you know, their development program. And if any one of them kind of shines in Austin, then they will come up. But I think that for those two players specifically, that's probably what's happening, is it's kind of a little bit of a, hey, come practice with us, earn a little bit of extra money. And then from that point, you can sign with the G League team to kind of be in our system.
Okay. So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts there. Where again, I think that they're either just doing that, like more so for depth, like I said, maybe get to these next few games, maybe they're going to sit some more players out, or two is maybe one of those three players ends up on this two-way spot. Cause I think that that's going to end up being the intention, is to give one of these three players that final two-way spot that they do have open at this moment. All right. So thank you to Colin for joining me here on this episode of the Spurs Cast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube and your favorite podcast apps. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Paul Garcia. The music for this episode was written by Paul Garcia and Vincent Garcia. For Project Spurs, thank you. Have a great day.